Welcome to Credit Exchange, your podcast for all things credit. I'm your host, Lisa Lee. This week, I was in Barcelona, attending FT Live and AFME's Global ABS Conference, where I met with bankers, asset managers, and investors in the securitization and CLO markets. And I bring to you four interviews from Bank of America, Blackstone, and King Street, and Federated Hermes. Here they are. I'm here with Alexander Bachvarov, Head of International Structured Finance Research at Bank of America. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
So we're at Barcelona at the Global ABS Conference, and you've been here since the very, very first one. Where was that?
Yes, the very first one took place in Ireland in 1997, if I remember correctly. So it was, I've been coming to the conference since last century.
And you are now here at the Legends of the Industry Fireside Chat. So tell me, as a legend in the industry, your takeaway from this conference?
It's a bit of an exaggeration. I think it's a nice marketing label. But yeah, I have been in the industry since 92. It's been a lifetime. Every time I come to this conference, the key observation I have is the mood of
yes.
the market.
And what is the mood this year?
And the mood is generally positive. Now, of course, around the positivities there and around the optimism, there are variations. But I would say probably the most often repeated summary is cautiously optimistic.
Yes.
I can understand this cautious optimism because if we just look at the securitization market, the structured finance sector, there are not many reasons for concern with regards to credit performance or structures or documentations. Of course, there are weaknesses in one place or another, but bottom line is there is no systemic weakness, there is no systemic risk. But the cautiousness comes from the broader market background. We are facing political and geopolitical risks, which we haven't faced in many years. And that changes or could change the background of the market very quickly. So no matter how well you do your job in the structured finance area, no matter how good a securitization bond is or the securitization pool, no matter how great the performance is, the broader background, a rapid deterioration or elevated volatility, negative surprises as we had on Liberation Day, they're all affecting the market. So that is the cautiousness we have, the uncertainty, the risks that we cannot quantify and predict versus the usual market risk we are quite familiar with.
Do you think that's being reflected in spreads and the pricing that we're seeing in European and US securitization products?
Well, again, let's say we have two aspects of risk, market risk based on credit and technicals, and we have geopolitical risk. I would say that the market risks are well reflected, adequately priced, but when it comes to the geopolitical risk, that is close to impossible to price, especially the rapid movement, surprise elements. I think that the market has incorporated all the information that they can actually price. And the uncertainty or the cautiousness comes from the information, the so-called known knowns or known unknowns that could surprise us. And then you can argue that maybe the market is not adequately priced, is what happened the first week of April. On a technical and credit fundamental basis, I think the market is adequately priced. I would even say that in some areas we may see potential for further spread compression on a pure fundamental credit and technical basis. From the geopolitical risk, we may have more surprises.
Yes. One of the themes that's building in markets right now is sort of a growing excitement over European credit, given some of the fatigue with what's going on in the US, but also this idea that there's going to be more fiscal spending. Maybe the European consumers might be more resilient. There's going to be less of a tariff impact in Europe. Do you buy that when you look at Europe globally? And is that the sense you're getting from investors?
When we take a look at the macro picture, there are certain changes which are gathering speed, and I think to some degree, maybe to a large degree, irreversible. The capital flows are changing direction. The US exceptionalism is now being questioned in the currency, in the capital markets. The growth areas, economic growth, are certainly not in the world developed markets. I mean, just look at Europe itself. The periphery, Eastern Europe, is growing much faster, has more solid economic growth than the core, so-called core economies. Actually, if you look at the spread recovery post-Liberation Day, we have areas of the market like some of the Spanish bonds, some of the Italian bonds, which are dipping inside the tides pre-Liberation Day, where we don't have the same development in, let's say, Holland or German auto. From the broader perspective, there are changes which are irreversible, or at least to a large degree irreversible. And that is leading to inflow and demand for paper in Europe. You probably know that we had a very substantial issuance of so-called reverse Yankees, U.S. companies seeking funding in euros and bringing it back home. And we have also rebalancing on a global basis of investment portfolios. Japanese investors traditionally looking in the U.S., building more exposure to Australia or Western Europe. We see money from the Middle East, usually dollar-based, flowing into markets such as Europe and Australia. You have the bifurcation of the APAC market between including China or not including China. If you're not including China in the portfolio of APAC X China, you need to add much more Australia, much more ABS market. These are broad developments, and I would say these are technical, but they're becoming part of the market, permanent feature of the market going forward.
So tell me what you think of some of these irreversible trends are. What are they, and why are they irreversible?
It is pretty obvious that we are talking about the end of U.S. exceptionalism, U.S. dollar dominance. It doesn't take, you don't have to go far just to look at the price of gold. And also, we have a significant increase in idiosyncratic risk, which is particularly well explained through the exposure to tariffs. So the first question when people ask, when U.S. declared some tariffs, was, well, which industries will be affected in Europe? And it, in a way, it's straightforward. Autos, some of the chemicals, some of the equipment, but autos is always the one that everybody first mentions. So if you have this elevated idiosyncratic and unpredictable risk because of geopolitics, you would like to have potentially the broadest possible geographic diversification and the broadest possible single name diversification. So in a way, that leads you almost definitely to the securitization market, where you have very large diversified pools with extremely low single name exposure, and then multiple geographies. We are seeing more interest in Japanese ABS product where people had not looked at for years. Australia is definitely booming and on everybody's radar screen. But we're also getting inquiries about what's happening in the domestic Mexican market, in the Indian market, and so on. So these are, in my view, some of the irreversible changes and consequences for the market.
When you talk about securitization market, it's much smaller here in Europe than in the U.S. And maybe many people cite that to regulation here, some of the capital charges. European regulators are attempting to change that. They're trying to see how securitization could finance the general broader economy. We're expected to have new regulations soon, but there have been leaks. What is your sense of where regulators are going and what can the market expect?
It is very difficult to comment on documents which are not final. I would base my comments on what I've seen in the media, what I heard during the conference, and based on my personal interaction with multiple parties on the European market. You don't have to go very far back. All you need to do is look at the Draghi and Letta report and Noyer reports, which very clearly stated the need for securitization, the need for the revival of the securitization market. One of the main reasons the European securitization market has not come back, recovered fully from the crisis, is the burdensome regulatory framework. The cost of entry, both for investors and issuers, is very high. There is a political element to that. Some people refer to it as the stigma. I think that is totally unjustified because the European securitization market performed extremely well, even under largest possible stress of the global financial crisis, the Eurozone crisis, and so on. somehow that was lost in translation, or the market became guilty by association.
It is an irony that the U.S. securitization market came back when the genesis of the crisis was in the U.S., right?
Not only the U.S. market, pretty much all the markets recovered. I mean, Australia last year issuance exceeded the peak of the GFC. Mm-hmm. Japan is recovering gradually. We had a boom in the Chinese securitization market, which not many people follow. But it is an irony, and I don't like the guilty by association position in which the European market was put in. But we are where we are. So the key question from now on is how the regulators are going to pedal back on extremely tight, conservative, and non-justified regulatory oversight. The key issue for me is that the regulatory framework put layer over layer of conservatism, and that is expressed in extremely long document of European securitization regulation, non-comparable to any other country to my knowledge, and extremely high cost of entry for most market participants. So we have to come back a little bit. And some of it is related to capital, some of it is related to due diligence, disclosure, and so on. It is not about relaxing the regulation. It's more about making them relevant to the risks involved and making them cost effective. So how that would happen is very difficult to say.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the time you spent with me, really. And I guess we're all flying back today.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
I'm here with Young Choi, who's still in Barcelona. He is the head of global trading at King Street and portfolio manager of King Street CLO business. Thank you so much for joining me, Young.
Well, thank you, Lisa, for having me.
So you were a panelist at our CLO symposium in London in May, and now you are also a panelist at the Global ABS in Barcelona, barely a month apart. Do you think there's any change in moods during that time?
First of all, both were well attended. The tone, I thought, was relatively similar from Credit Flux last month to Barcelona this week. Now, with that being said, it is Friday morning here in Barcelona, and there's a lot of geopolitical kind of macro news that came out overnight, which I think the market is still trying to digest. You've seen some market moves. And so that isn't reflected in the commentary that I'll give. So that's kind of a caveat to everything that I'll say, because a lot of things have happened overnight. But I would say the tone was relatively constructive. And there seems to be a preference, from the crowd in Barcelona, for European credit versus U.S. corporate credit. And I think there are a couple of reasons for that. One is just the natural regional bias, given that a lot of the participants that come to the Barcelona conference are located in Europe and invest primarily in European corporate credit. With that being said, we also saw a number of U.S.-based structured credit investors here in Barcelona meeting with European managers, getting up to speed on the asset class and the manager universe over here, looking for opportunities. And this is similar to what we saw in Credit Flux as well. I'd say the other thing in terms of the bias to European credit seems to be just that European leverage credit, by and large, away from the number of over-levered capital structures that you might find, European leverage credit has generally outperformed U.S. corporate credit. If you look at defaults have been much more muted. And I think more importantly, liability management exercises and kind of distressed debt exchanges, especially the aggressive form that you see in the U.S., has been very slow to come over here to Europe. And so I think given that, you've seen a lot of outperformance in European credit. And so I think in terms of the bias, you've seen a lot of that kind of commentary from investors regarding Europe.
Yeah. Do you think this is a trend that's been going on for a while, this preference for European investments? Or is it something that's been accelerated by some of the issues in America, the tariffs, some of the geopolitical and macro things that's going on in the U.S. recently in the past year?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, because I think if you came to this conference a couple of years ago and asked that same question, I think it would have been reversed. There were a lot of things, people that were concerned about Europe, whether it was just energy, whether, there were a number of factors where, the growth in Europe was much more of a concern than the U.S. It hasn't completely flipped, but I think the narrative has definitely changed where, again, speaking with investors, much more constructive, just given what they have actually seen from corporate credit and how the performance of corporate credit within the two geographies. I think that definitely has changed over the course of a couple of years.
And now we talk about all the geopolitical issues, which was a caution that's been running throughout everyone I've been talking to in the market. But how do you invest when in the morning you wake up and there's some new news constantly, whether from Israel or from Ukraine or from the U.S.? Just seems like a very uncertain period right now.
Some of it, I think, will also depend on in terms of what type of capital, what form of capital that you have. I mean, I think if you can take a long-term approach to investing, that can help you, you know, filter out some of the day-to-day noise that may come up and some of the volatility that you may experience. But with that being said, you know, there are a lot of investors that have to, from a mark-to-market perspective, take all of this into account. And so I think a lot of it comes to positioning, you know, how are you positioning your portfolio just given where spread levels are, given the potential risks that you see. The panel that I was on the other day in terms of the concerns that people had, almost everyone raised just the geopolitical kind of macro, whether it's tariff noise, whether it's what's happening in the Middle East, a lot of these things that are very, very difficult to handicap and kind of assign probabilities to. So I think it's positioning your portfolio ahead of time, just making sure that whether it's defensive enough or you have the ability to respond to some of these reactions that you might see in the global market, just making sure that your portfolio is set up for that.
How do you set up your portfolio and defensively? Do you buy less leveraged credit? Do you buy certain industries? How do you go about making a portfolio that can sort of weather this kind of uncertainty and volatility?
At King Street, we have different pockets of capital. Our flagship hedge fund, which has been around for 30 years now, we actually celebrated our 30th anniversary. So a flagship hedge fund that can go both long and short. And so there, you have much more flexibility in terms of how you can position the portfolio. And I would say, just given how much spreads have retraced over the course of the last, since April, really, how quickly things have retraced, you know, we are finding attractive shorts now, again, just given, again, where spreads have come in. And I think what is really interesting is that when you look at the credit indices, you know, from a very high level, just looking at the indices, everything looks fine. The credit indices have retraced. Maybe they're not at their year-to-date tights, but they've largely retraced the moves, you know, kind of back to pre-April levels. And so you've seen this large retracement. But if you look under the surface, if you look at the actual dispersion, what you find is that there is quite a bit of dispersion within the credit markets, you know, regardless of which asset class you're looking at. And the underperformers, so companies and corporates that are underperforming are severely punished in the market, whether it's process related or whether it's earnings related, you see significant moves. And so I think that type of environment allows you to find both attractive longs and attractive shorts when you see that type of dispersion take place.
What are some of the longs that are giving out your secret juice? And what are some conceptually some of the longs and what are some of the shorts?
For us, we tend to be bottoms up focused. So we are underwriting the specific credit. You know, we have a long history in investing in stressed and distressed credit. So it is really a bottoms up approach to investing in, you know, fundamental credit. And so there are, I would say, a number of names that we are constructive on. And really what we're looking for, the ideal situation is you're finding a very good company, a good business that happens to have a bad balance sheet. And we all know, just given with what's happened with rates over the last, you know, the increase in rates that you've seen over the last, you know, last several years, a lot of companies and a lot of good companies at that are having cash flow issues, partly just because they were overlevered, you know, during kind of the boom times, during the LBO boom times. And so you've seen overlevered capital structures in good businesses. And so one of the areas that we focused on was really looking to provide capital solutions for these types of businesses. Again, high quality businesses that need capital, that we believe have a path to actually grow out of, to grow into their capital structure and be able to kind of sustain the capital structure that they have. But it's really being able to provide the liquidity that they need to get there. So I think that's been one area that's been fairly fruitful for us. And again, it's very name specific. You have to understand the credit. You have to understand the documents that are backing the loans and the bonds in that capital structure. But it's really focusing on those types of issuers, I would say.
And what is your outlook for the rest of the year? Are you constructive as well? Or do you think there might be more volatility and maybe we've retraced a little too quickly?
You're looking to buy, you're never satisfied with the price. You always wish that it were lower. I think broadly, if you speak to other investors and speaking with other investors, you know, like parties at the conference, you know, everyone in many ways wished that the volatility had stayed around for a little bit longer, that they had a little bit more time to be able to kind of accumulate the positions that they thought were at attractive levels. But with that being said, look, it's very difficult to handicap some of these, you know, macro events that we're talking about. But if you think about what the path of least resistance is, you know, again, barring what happened last night and kind of what you're seeing very early in the morning today, you know, I would have said, and I think market participants would have said, you're going to see kind of a continued tightening within credit. And if you look at structured credit in particular, you know, certain parts of structured credit haven't retraced, whether it's, you know, probably the AAA part of the capital structure hasn't retraced nearly as much as kind of the mezzanine parts of the capital structure. And so the general view is that you would see kind of tightening in structured credit and just credit in general, barring kind of these macro events that everyone is concerned about.
Great. Thank you so much. And any final words for our audience as we leave?
Thank you for having me. And I would say again that the conference was great. And one of the great things about this conference is that there is a really wide range of investors and managers and issuers that come to this conference. And so in one place, you have the ability to speak with varying parties from all across the globe. And so from King Street standpoint, we, you know, we bring multiple teams to this conference, whether it's our CLO business, you know, holding manager meetings, or our in the investing team looking at investing in various parts of structured credit. We find the conference very, very enjoyable.
Great. Thank you so much, Young. And thank you for jumping on to such short notice. I really appreciate it. I'm here with Alex Leonard, Head of European Liquid Credit Strategies at Blackstone. Thank you so much, Alex, for joining me.
Nice to be speaking with you, Lisa.
You're now in Dublin and I'm in London, but even yesterday we were in Barcelona attending the Global ABS Conference. So tell me, what was the mood of the conference? What was your takeaway? You've been a long-time attendee of these conferences.
Yeah, that's true. I've been going for many years and not going to comment on the number of years, but I would say a couple of things. I would say definitely seeing increased interest in Europe and European credit more broadly. Clearly, Europe, on a relative basis, it's benefiting from a relatively stable backdrop. Clearly, we're seeing inflation trending the right direction, down and to the right, underlying base rates increasingly supportive, and improved sentiment in Europe around the potential for supportive fiscal policy in Germany, EU making a clear capital markets important for the European economy. We clearly do need to remain vigilant. We are seeing increased geopolitical risk, noise around tariffs. But that said, when I look just to the European loan market, direct exposure specifically around tariffs remains relatively low. Issuer sector footprint typically more pan-European in nature. There is some top-line exposure, you know, related, or that it has some USN market exposure. But where there is that exposure, we're typically seeing local manufacturing for local market in place. So some level of natural hedging. Clearly, the tariff noise does create some overall corporate consumer negative sentiment. And our view is we will see lower growth this year. But we feel pretty good when our focus remains very much on strategies that are investing in senior secured loans, positioned in the most senior part of the cap stack, low LTV, that continues to look okay in a low growth environment. You know, and other questions I would say just that came up at the conference were really around our views on loan pricing. The market has come back quite strong in a relatively short period. Defaults, always a focus. Recoveries, always a focus. And how do we, within the firm, think about those looking forward the next 6-12 months? And we do clearly need to remain cautious, but certainly looking at the fundamentals, I would say, and the real data that we're seeing across all of our portfolio companies, you know, we generally continue to feel good about European credit. So the tone versus prior years, certainly, I would say, cautious, but optimistic as well.
There definitely is a more of an interest in Europe that I sensed as well, right? And a bit of a caution, but positivity. Even in this year, we started off so bullish at the beginning of the year, and then we had all the volatility in April after Liberation Day, and then the market regaining itself. Even from a month ago, when Credit Flux had a CLO symposium and you were there, do you think the tone has shifted at all? Or has it become more bullish, the same, or maybe even a little bit more subdued because people are getting to a sense that there's such greater uncertainty? For instance, even overnight, we had more geopolitical news coming out.
I would say that the market, or certainly the discussions I've had with investors, and you're completely right, more optimistic, but also cautious. And what I mean by that, I mean, as you highlighted, I've been coming to the conference for years, and the seat I sit in meant that, you know, certainly over the last number of years, I've been explaining to investors the opportunity that is Europe, whether it's European CLO debt or equity or broader opportunity for European credit. And I would say those conversations this year in a very broad lens were easier. There's recognition that the market has performed quite well through relatively challenging markets. We now have relatively challenging periods. We now have a lot of data, whether it's through GFC, pandemic, LDI in Europe, or the more recent tariff volatility, or the more recent geopolitical noise that you've highlighted. So I would say definitely looking to Europe and recognizing that Europe feels on a relative basis generally stable, and you're hearing more cohesion at the European political level around being more coordinated, whether it's fiscal spend or other. So I think that's generally positive. There is a lot of noise out there, and clearly our job is to look through that noise and to invest in the long term. The other piece I would just say is just specifically about the conference. We're definitely seeing a lot more investors coming from wider locations. Previously, it would have been primarily European only. We're now talking to Asian investors, Canadian investors, African investors, and all wanting to discuss that opportunity in Europe with Blackstone. So I think that's positive.
What are some of the worries that they came up with? What are some of the worries that you heard from LPs and from investors? And what are the worries that you have yourself? Because, you know, we're credit people.
You're right. Credit people just generally tend to worry about what can go wrong. Look, I would say that, you know, performance always has to be the North Star. You can take comfort that we have seen earnings generally improve across portfolios, but we clearly need to stay focused on tail risk. So given that earlier comment on an expectation that we're in an environment that will be one of slower growth than initially expected at the start of the year, we certainly remain cautious and aware, if that's the sort of lens or the title to apply, would be certainly those more cyclical sectors. The recovery that was expected through 2025, that potentially gets pushed out a little bit. We continue to remain focused in defensive sectors. That's always been the footprint through the cycle. As mentioned, I would say, you know, the positive is historical performance looks solid, but you're certainly seeing an inflection point in sentiment. So whether it's investment in CapEx, hiring, I think that that's a little bit more a patient. It's easier to do nothing than do something until you have clarity around the tariff noise and some of the external risks that we're seeing. The other thing I think about is clearly the technical in our markets. Plenty of demand, or certainly increased demand for credit. And, you know, ideally, we see a healthy European loan pipeline. Positive news, clearly, that's, we took a pause through April post the tariff noise. We've seen it pick up a little. The positive, I would say, is pricing within the market has fully come back to pre-bullet April levels. So it's now at a point where the market can be supportive of M&A activity as that picks up. So I think that's a positive. You know, we continue to think and worry about fundamentals and technicals. You know, at a Blackstone level, I would say, you know, we have a great team, a lot of experience and track record navigating these opportunities to these markets. We've been doing this a long time in Europe, and our size, scale, incumbency, I would also highlight in the market, puts us in a great position to continue to get access to some of those better opportunities that get presented to us.
Well, since you mentioned your own firm and also that there was a pause in the market in April, because actually Blackstone didn't pause very much, whereas a lot of other managers and other firms stopped issuing, particularly CLOs and even leveraged loans. You guys are out there doing deals. So what is your thought process going like? We're going to do deals when other people aren't. And what if those deals have gotten bad? I mean, there was a reason why people paused.
I think the key point to flag is we're always investing in the long term. We have a great analyst team, US, Europe, with a lot of experience. And what we really ask of them during these periods of volatility is to, so for example, the tariff noise was to very, very quickly re-underwrite the portfolios. And we had been doing that ahead of time to identify where there might be pockets of weakness, and very, very quickly, you know, identify where we feel, continue to be comfortable in the long term. So you're completely right. We were very active deploying capital through that period across all of our strategies. And now we're able to unwind some of those trades at quite attractive levels as the market has come back, and build portfolios that look very, very attractive. So I think the key point is certainly when we're deploying capital, it's ignoring the noise, investing in the long term. And I think we have the scale, team experience to do that quite quickly. So it can be very active on dislocations and put capital to work effectively.
And then now, I know you're not a forecaster, but if you had to forecast the rest of the year, what do you think? In terms of the market, like where spreads will go, issuance, just the general outlook for the market.
It's always difficult to forecast out 3, 6, 12 months out, but certainly the short term feels, just given the conference we've just come from, you know, the demand for credit is there. So I think the technical remains quite strong. We're coming into a summer period. Typically, the pipeline might slow down a little, not as much as it historically did. We still get deals done in August as we did last year. The technical remains strong. So potential for spreads to remain stable to marginally tightening, certainly in the short term. I do think there's potential for the pipeline of loan supply to improve just given where pricing is. So that should give a little bit of a counterbalance as we go into the second half of the year. CLOs, a big buyer of the leveraged loan space in Europe, continue to get created. So that's a supportive technical as well. And then when I look beyond that, I think you got to recognize that there's, as you highlighted at the start of this, a lot of geopolitical noise out there. We may see some periods of volatility, 6-12 months, you know, whether it's, you know, more noise around tariffs, whether it's beginning to see how, you know, the Q2, Q3 numbers, everything to date historically has looked quite good on performance, but you are seeing an inflection point around sentiment. And how does that play out in terms of performance, Q2, Q3? I would say in the short term, you know, there spreads, as mentioned, potentially go a little bit tighter. But in the medium term, I would expect, you know, you will see opportunities to deploy at attractive levels. And by the way, pricing a CLO, for example, in this market looks extremely attractive just given where CLO liabilities are. And so, you know, that's something that we certainly speak with our investors about.
Great. Thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on.
Great. And I really enjoyed speaking with you, Lisa.
Thank you so much, Alex. And look forward to the next conference together.
Great. Look forward to it.
I'm here with Andrew Lennox, Senior Portfolio Manager at Federated Hermes. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me on the podcast.
So we're at Global ABS in Barcelona, where you've been attending since 2006. So tell me, what's the mood like right now? Because you've been a longtime veteran of this conference.
I do feel like a veteran of the conference. I think it's typical for us to walk away from the conference and characterize it as cautiously optimistic as the tone overall. But I think this year, I'd go a little bit further and say it's been positive. I don't know the official numbers of how many people were here, but it felt extremely busy. There were a lot of people here from across issuers, investors, service providers, lawyers. The whole industry seemed to turn up for this event. There were an awful lot of meetings. So I was in meetings all day, Tuesday and Wednesday. And typically, things start to tail off and get a little bit quieter on the Wednesday towards the afternoon. Up until 5 o'clock, the conference center was still full. There was an awful lot of meetings still taking place. And that suggests to me that there's a lot of issuers coming to meet investors. There's a lot of issuance in the pipeline, both on the ABS side and the CLO side. So I think we're going to have a busy post-conference period. So I think summer could be quite a busy period.
So how could that be? Tell me, given all the volatility that's been recently, you know, we had in April, President Donald Trump announced surprisingly high tariffs. We've got geopolitical issue with Ukraine and Russia in Europe's doorsteps. And yet the mood is so very positive. Do you think that's warranted? Are you worried at all?
Well, I think one of the things that we've really learned and what we've witnessed over recent months, but also recent years, is the lack of volatility in our market at times when we need less volatility in our portfolios overall. So when other asset classes are reacting to what's going on in the world, let's take Liberation Day as the example. So Liberation Day comes along, CLOs did react. So there was a widening in CLO spreads. On the ABS side, less of a reaction. There was less trading. There was less of a mark-to-market move. So people saw that that was a much less volatile asset class. So an allocation to something like that, when there are these spikes in volatility, is very useful in portfolios. And I think people have walked away from Liberation Day and the volatility that that caused and realized that actually ABS performed pretty well. It was quite orderly. There wasn't any forced selling. Any sellers coming to the market weren't just accepting any bid. So the marks didn't really move. And I think people have really appreciated that allocation in their portfolios as a result.
That's surprising. It actually showed resilience and maybe benefited from the recent market volatility. Another interesting aspect being in Barcelona and talking to investors around the globe is the greater enthusiasm for European credit, for European securitization, European CLOs. Given that even in the early in the year, we were talking about scoliosis in Europe and Mario Draghi's report, and that's really seemed to have turned, especially given what's going on in the US and perhaps US exceptionalism being too slow, perhaps with Donald Trump's policies that might force Germany especially to do more fiscal spending, there's a sense that Europe might grow faster. There's a sense of excitement about Europe. Do you buy that argument? Is that what you're hearing when you're talking to your investors, to your managers? Tell me your outlook for European credit.
Yeah, I think we're starting to see some early signs of a pivot away from the allocations towards the US and investors looking for opportunities elsewhere. And Europe seems to be a beneficiary of that. And into that story, as you've already mentioned, the fiscal spending in countries such as Germany, but across Europe, whether it be driven by defense spending or other motivations, it seems that Europe is picking up some momentum, whereas the US had it for a number of years. The US may be seen as a less reliable trading partner, but also as an investment opportunity. You know, taxing foreign investments going into the US is going to be an issue. So who picks up that money? Europe seems an obvious choice. So I think that there is potential for that boost to come through. As part of that, you know, you're going to have more consumer spending. More consumer spending could mean more ABS issuance on the back of it. So I think we've got different pictures as well at the moment. So the US consumer has been supporting the growth story and the GDP story and the economy in the US for the past, let's say, 5 years. The US consumer is a big part of how the US economy is performing. Over here in Europe, we have a different type of consumer. You know, savings ratios in Europe are higher than they were pre-COVID, and they seem to be staying at those higher levels. We have a more cautious consumer. So there is a greater buffer within the consumer base if things do go south, if there is a downturn in the economy. So I think we can take some comfort from the forward-looking performance of a lot of these assets, knowing that consumers have put a bit more cash away. You know, we didn't have the excess savings as a reliance that we've had in the UK and the US. We're not looking at that anymore, but what we're looking at is a higher savings ratio. So I think performance going forward should be supported by that.
When you look through the broader landscape of ABS and CLOs throughout in the US and Europe, because you do all of it, what sectors are you most enthusiastic about? Where do you think is the best investment opportunities?
Oh, that's a difficult one. I'll have to think about that. But I think what we're looking at the moment is on a relative value basis. You know, there's whether you're looking at our asset class or other asset classes, valuations are pretty tight. Valuations are high in equities. Valuations are tight in credit. So what we're looking at is where were we before Liberation Day? Everybody was moaning at how tight spreads were, whether you're looking across the stack in ABS or in CLOs. So what we're looking at now is where other asset classes have fully retraced and sometimes gone through pre-Liberation Day levels. What we're looking at is what hasn't retraced fully. So there are certain parts of the capital stack within CLOs that haven't fully retraced.
So the mezzanine portion, is that what you're thinking about?
The mezzanine portion. So, you know, double Bs, for example, right now, they haven't fully gone back. I think the tight prints were in the high 400s, so 470 for a double B pre-Liberation Day. We're still in the kind of mid 500s. There's a slightly different dynamic going on with CLOs versus some other parts of the market in that there's supply coming to the market. We've got a very high level of warehouses that are open, higher than average, both in Europe as well as in the US.
And everyone seems to be wanting to get deals done.
Everybody, looking around the conference and talking to CLO managers, no one's concerned about getting deals done. In fact, one of the interesting points is when you talk to CLO managers, no matter where you are in the cycle, no matter where asset levels are versus the liability levels, CLO managers will always bring up the arbitrage argument and say that the arbitrage is challenged. I think this is the first conference I've gone through where no CLO manager has mentioned that.
Okay.
So it seems that the arbitrage argument has taken a back seat because everyone's looking to issue. The demand has been there. You know, if you look at mezzanine tranches, they're all oversubscribed or have been up until recently. One of the sticking points will be who's the AAA investor, because there's a lot of AAAs coming to the market, so there needs to be a lot of money deployed there. But I think overall, the issuance will be coming, and I think it's going to be a positive few months on the back of this.
And yet at the same time, when you look at the IMF and the OECD, they've just lowered growth forecast for, I think, both US and many countries in Europe. Are you worried about an economic slowdown? Are you worried about maybe even a recession given some of the macroeconomic dynamics? And then we have defaults, right?
I think that's something that we as an investor are positioned for, a slowdown in the economy, a slowdown in consumer spending, so discretionary spending. We're already seeing some trends there where, you know, people are not maybe buying the thing that they would have wanted 6 months ago, 12 months ago, when there were excess savings and still that post-COVID period. You know, whether travel is something that starts to decline as well. You know, we've had a real boost in travel since COVID. The chance of a recession is real. I don't think people are pricing it in as the thing that's going to happen by the end of this year, but we have to price it into what we're looking at. We're not fully pricing it in at the moment because there's a lot of demand for assets. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of cash coming to the market. You know, there's been a lot of money being invested in credit. There's a lot of money being invested in structured credit. As a floating rate asset class, there's been money coming into it. It's also performed very well, as we've also mentioned. So I think that level of demand, that may start to reduce as people start to increase their probabilities of recession. Mm. I wouldn't say it's our base case at the moment. I wouldn't say most people are saying it's their base case, but it's certainly something that we need to look out for. I think one of the things that, if we were to look at CLOs, one of the trends, whilst managers aren't talking about the arbitrage being challenging, they are talking about supply being challenging, mm-hmm. So the underlying assets.
We know a lot of the sale processes that private equity firms had, the LBOs, the kind of financing that drives leveraged loan supply, those sales processes fell apart during April. And from what I hear, they're probably not going to come back this year. So that just means lack of leveraged loan supplies. And then, of course, you have private credit taking more and more bigger share of that. Given the lack of supply, how are they going to deal with that challenge? Because you can't have a CLO unless you have new leveraged loans.
Yeah, and I think that is the challenge. That's one of the key themes of the conversations I've been having with CLO managers is really, where is the supply going to come from? And I think the CLO managers I've been talking to and the conversations have been reasonable in that everyone's talking about slower ramps. You know, everyone's mm-hmm. happy to take their time, wait for the primary issuance to come, where you've got an OID on that primary issuance, as opposed to buying things at or above par and secondary. Those are the opportunities that people are waiting for. But the whole market, you know, we've got more managers than we've ever had before in Europe, and they're all looking for paper and they're all looking to issue. So yes, that issuance, that bottleneck with issuance, that needs to be unlocked in order for the asset base to grow, in order for the CLO issuance to really continue.
And any worries beyond sort of an economic slowdown that you are factoring into your investment decisions, or maybe not even if you're not factoring into your investment decision that you're thinking about as an investor?
As an investor, I think when you see the level of demand that we have been seeing for structured credit, whether it's ABS or CLOs, there's always the potential for structures and docs to slide. But I think overall, given the level of demand, we've been very successful at keeping things quite tight.
Great. Thank you so much. This has been a great conversation. I really appreciate you spending the time with me here in Barcelona.
Thanks very much, Lisa.